Let's just put it this way. Now that we're recording, I won't say anything more other than
Stop
computers lie to
recording.
you. Yeah, computers lie to you.
No, stop that.
Computers don't lie, people lie.
That's right. Computers don't lie, it's your observability tool that lies.
Oh no, I was thinking more about your hopes and dreams lie about how well the computers are running.
I guess there's that.
Good
So what's
stuff.
going on, all?
Oh, you
Yeah.
know. As I rock my Minnesotan accent super hard on a
Wow.
rough week in Minnesota.
Oh yeah, that is true. Yeah.
Jesus. I
So
think what, yeah.
I have one question about the whole situation going on.
You'll have to be more specific
Well, that's
eventually,
good
but please
because
continue.
Matt's got one answer, so
There you
you
go.
pair it well.
Yeah.
So from what I understand, there's legit curfews in Minneapolis right now, and there are so in my mind, there's like National Guard troops driving around the city and things like that. Is that actually what's going on?
Yeah, that's legit what's going on.
Oh
Yeah.
my God.
So we there's a pho place we really like on the side of town closer to Brooklyn Center, which is a suburb away from opposite direction from where I live, and wanted to go there this week, drive that direction, see Humvees, see people in full military garb with can't remember what kind of gun was on them. It is some semi to fully automatic rifle, and yeah, it's that energy throughout the greater Twin Cities. So it's happening in St. Paul. It's happening in Minneapolis. Brooklyn Center is its own city technically. I live in another city technically, but they're all kind of mesh into the greater suburbs of Minneapolis. And yeah, that's definitely the energy. I'm sure I could have like left at night in this quiet neighborhood and not gotten into any trouble. But you know, like all laws, they're only used when people want something to be legal. And a white guy walking down the street, doesn't have to be legal. Oh, you have like a something dangling from your rearview mirror. I want that to be illegal because I want to arrest you. Like that's the discrepancy in policing that's very obvious right now. But yeah, to answer your question, yeah, there's some big fucking military vehicles around, and even though, you know, within half an hour to an hour of the legal curfew, you're already going to get gassed or shot with a rubber bullet if you're in front of the wrong kind of cop, which seems to be all of them.
Jesus. I'm sorry,
Yeah,
man.
man. No,
It's cool.
I'm fine. I think it's just proximity to other people's trauma. Like I want to be very clear. I am not at the center of any of these issues here, and I don't want it to be about me at all. I just want to acknowledge like it's real, it's happening. And then for the same week, did you guys see the video of this old white guy that almost killed like a policeman driving
Oh
away from them
yeah.
in Minnesota? Can you
Like
believe this shit?
he like drove into them with his car and then hit one of the cops in the head with a hammer.
Yeah.
And they're like, "Oh, you know, old white guy's gonna old white guy, what are you gonna do?"
Jesus.
Yeah, it's this video is out there, and it's a guy's name Luke, I don't know, Ojibruns or however you say it, and he attacked a cop for he was approached by cops for first attacking a store employee, and then he rammed two cop cars, dragged an officer to evade arrest, hit one of the officers in the head with a hammer. And you know, lives to, you know, white guy another day, as you said. I can just imagine somebody being like, oh yeah, well, he just reminds me of my dad. While, you know, the dead black men in this area didn't. And that is some energy that has been in the way of being terribly productive this week.
This week, yeah. Hasn't it kind of been
this year
as in the last 12 months, not this year as in the last like 3 months.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like it's been going on for so long now. If you follow Ian Coldwater on Twitter, which I know both of you do, there's constantly updates on just being buzzed by choppers at like odd times of the night just to try and keep everyone on edge.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of tactics happening from the like the policing side of things. It's just like they're going out of their way to keep things tense and escalated. It's amazing. It's hard to believe. I mean, it's not hard to believe, but it's hard to believe, you know.
Yeah. I'm with you. I'm like, it's one of those things you're like, that can't be. They wouldn't do that. Like, that's not what protecting and serving means. Right. And like, oh, they've always done that? And I just didn't notice?
Right.
Huh. That's news. So like, yeah.
So is this like, I mean, I'm not trying to make a joke.
This is a safe space.
Okay.
Like, we can be as dumb as we need to and figure it out.
But yeah. As I was growing up, I watched dystopian films, right? Like we all do, especially tech nerds do. I'm hearing echoes here, right? Of what like the dystopian films I used to watch when I was growing up, sounding like it's starting here in Minneapolis and St. Paul. Like what we've obviously we don't have John Connor, right? Like we don't have John Connor. He's not going to come back from the future and kill.
John Connor didn't come back from the future. Well, maybe so, no, he was already in like Terminator 6 or something, but yeah. Certainly not.
Yeah. You get my point.
No, like there are a bunch of Blade Runners around. What's happening?
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. I'm very confused. I'm very confused.
So every black person is John Connor, and the police are the bad Terminators, and there's no good Terminators sent back to stop the bad Terminators. There you go. There's your, okay. I fixed your Terminator reference.
Perfect. Thank you.
Yeah, we were all worried about.
Which one of you is Neo?
I
think that's our title right there.
Dystopian future, as in like. I forgot the name of it now. The one where it's just a
1984
on, like stupid
or
stuff.
Brave New World.
Demolition Man.
Oh, Idiocracy.
Idiocracy being real, but it's the dystopian future of like Terminator or Demolition Man or you know whatever Judge Dredd. That's actually the one that snuck up on us. Well, snuck up on us. It didn't sneak up on everybody.
Yeah, exactly.
I am the law.
Oh, God. I want to start an Instagram that's just a Venn diagram of dystopian novels and movies. And like the center is like what this week feels like.
Oh, my. Right. Oh, that's
Judge Dredd and Terminator, 1984 and Brave New World.
That's pretty like, good.
We could do this for at least a couple days.
I feel like we could do with the peace and quiet of a water world right now.
Peace and quiet of a water world. I'd look good with gills.
I mean, I'm already drinking rock stars. It's pretty close to my own. Wait, what? No? Damn it. I thought it was good.
Sorry, JJ.
Thank you for that, JJ.
I tried. I did.
So on the upside, like there's a lot of bad stuff going down in your area. But I know there's one really good thing that's going down in that area, and that is you now have easy access to Wagyu steak.
Yeah, this was...
Now, I don't feel that quite offsets the rest of it, but at the same time, it's almost a segue to move on to the next topic, unless, of course, we want to stick it where we are.
No, that's good. Like, let's acknowledge we are not going to solve that very much. Life will go on here. A lot of work to do. But yeah, on the very bright side, and on a very, you know, totally privileged and different conversation, there's a very fancy meat store that opened about a mile away from me that seems to have every cut of meat that my meat friends covet. So yeah, Paul, you and Hans and JJ jumping in, JJ just saying buy it all immediately. I'm like, I don't think I can afford it all. But like, yeah, can you talk through, I mean, I'm blown away. It's called J. Morton's if you're in the Twin Cities. And what the heck's it about? Like,
I mean, it looks like it's just a really good collection of like high-end meats. So I've just jumped back into it. So they have like some dry aged stuff, which is always good. They have a bunch of Wagyu. They have Japanese A5. They have Australian Wagyu, which uses the MS ratings. And I think the MS9 is about this, like, is getting close to what like an A5 is. And I don't remember the MS stuff all that well. But looking at their lists, I mean, they've got their A5 ribeye, A5 NY strip. Both of those would be amazing. And then looking at the Australian one, I reckon the two, maybe three ones that jump out at me there are the picanha, the tri-tip, and then either the bavette or the hanger steak. They all kind of jump out at me.
Hot damn.
Hang on. Yeah. Hang on. You touched on something I still have never gotten clarity around. The fuck is a tri-tip? No, the steak, right? Like what part of that is, and like what do you normally use that for? Because it's not like
so think about kind. Yeah. Think of a tri-tip as a very small brisket. No, that's a terrible thing. But so tri-tip is like the California barbecue. And in California barbecue, it's generally like closer to hot and fast versus low and slow. And so it's a roast, and it's actually from roughly the same area as the tri-tip. So as the picanha.
Oh.
And so it's kind of got a lot of similar characteristics there. But it generally doesn't have quite the extreme fat cap of the picanha. And you usually cook it as the whole muscle versus chopped into steaks on a skewer like you do at the Brazilian steakhouse. So you would usually do a low and slow, like direct heat grill on it and get it up to like a medium rare. Try to get a good, you know, crust/bark on it. Or you do like your reverse sear. So you do low and slow and then sear it at the end.
So you've described everything I hate. So perfect. I know I need to stay away from the tri-tip. Yes.
You don't like?
In general,
what don't you like there?
It's just because there's no fat cap like the picanha. If it's already close to the picanha, I'm going to want the fat cap. The tri-tips I've ever always seen have always been not really like, usually it's Costco, right? And they're relatively well marbled, but they're usually like this flat, like almost fajito looking thing. And when I pick it up and I think about eating it, I'm like, no, this doesn't seem like something like, I'm not real. Like if I'm going to do revere or reverse searing or direct heat, I'm definitely going just straight to a New York strip. Right.
Yeah. Because here's the deal. Mm-hmm. So the tri-tip should be pretty thick. Like I would say like 3-ish inches. So if you're not seeing that, then
no.
Definitely avoid it. It definitely shouldn't look like a skirt steak or anything.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what I saw.
I don't know. Yeah. I don't know what to say there, but it is actually a really good, enjoyable cut of meat. Mm. And you can get like a good, like smoky barbecued result out of it from a fairly standard, simple charcoal grill in less than an hour. And it's delicious.
Really?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. I think we have a date, CZ. I think we have a date.
We will need to do a tri-tip.
Yes.
And I'll show you why you're wrong, as per usual. Now, speaking of people being wrong, I want to talk about cooking some of these things, because I feel like I don't want to tell people they shouldn't be cooking things certain ways, but I also feel like...
That's what somebody says right before you're going to tell people they shouldn't cook things certain ways.
You probably shouldn't give advice to other people on cooking things if you don't actually really know what you're doing. And I say that as someone who often gives advice about things he doesn't really know what he's doing.
Why don't we stop with the, you know, the absolutes and just get to the point.
Yeah, I realized I was not doing myself any favors there. So anyway, when you've got like an American Wagyu or an Australian Wagyu of like medium-ish marbling, totally cool, cook it like a steak. But when you get to like the A5 or the MS9, where like there's more marble than there is meat, cooking like a whole ribeye as a steak is like exciting and it's showy, but it's really not the best way to enjoy it. If you look at like in Japan, the way they cook it is they kind of cut it a bit thinner than we would expect. And then they'll not only cut it into its individual muscle groups, thinking that like a ribeye has kind of three different muscle sets involved. You've got the cap, you've got the round, and then there's usually like a little lumpy bit off the bottom as well. And so the way I've always enjoyed cooking these is you first of all take the thicker fat cappy bits off, because on a really fast cook it doesn't render out and it's not particularly enjoyable to chew on a chunk of not properly cooked fat. But what it is great for is like greasing your pan or whatever, right? So I want a flat top, whether that's a flat top grill, whether it's a cast iron pan or whatever. And even those little flat tops you get for Korean barbecue that go over the portable propane butane stoves, they're also great for it. So you kind of rub it down with that. And you really, JJ, you're going to distract me in the middle of that with some nonsense.
It's okay, an audio medium. You're supposed to continue talking.
Right. And so I'll usually then cut the steak like into those primal muscles at about maybe half an inch thick. And then I'll often cut those into several pieces. And then you can kind of enjoy it in a couple of different ways. So you'll cook one, like your first piece, cook no salt, no pepper. Just give it a cook on both sides, get it nice and browned on both sides, sort of pinkish in the middle still, medium rare, and then dip it in some egg yolk and then just eat that. And it is so good. And then you'll like experiment with a bit of salt and pepper on one. You experiment with like a bit of salt and pepper before cooking versus after cooking. And you sort of have a bunch of fun, like enjoying cooking it with different like techniques on this flat top and seeing what different results are. And you get like, it's way more enjoyable than just having like one big thick steak cooked to medium rare that is so rich that if you eat that whole steak, you're not going to feel great. Whereas if you cut that steak in half, you put half of it in the freezer for next time, and then you cook this one with like three friends and you kind of sit around, drink beer and like eat these delicious nubs of delicious meat, you're golden.
Interesting. I would never, ever have thought about that as like a strategy to do that. So let's break it down a little further. Why egg yolk?
It's just so good. It's basically like it's a sauce in a little pouch ready to be eaten.
Yeah. I mean, to sustain life, that's literally its goal. So that makes sense.
It's just delicious. And it's like a, it is like a, kind of like a, it's definitely one of the standard like options for like a sauce you have when you're eating it at a yakiniku restaurant in Japan, which is roughly what I just explained is what you would get at a yakiniku. And it's cool. So good. And I always find that like that first piece dipped in the yolk is just like, it just sets things in motion. It gets your mouth all watering. It gives you that delicious, like, I don't know. It's just the way to go.
For those listening, because it's an audio only format, Paul looks happier than he is most of the time. Like he's experiencing some reveries here that are working for him. And you said flat top. So are you using, does it matter, gas or charcoal, or you're just like something that's hot and ready to go?
Something that's hot and ready to go. You know, flat top, you're not going to get too much smoke out of it. And really, like, you don't need the smoke. You could totally use charcoal and have like a grate over charcoal. And that's good as well. But there's something to me about like you're paying a lot of money for A5 Wagyu. Like, enjoy the A5 Wagyu and don't adulterate it too much. And that's why, like, even cooking it without salt and pepper and experiencing it without salt and pepper is like really interesting, because there's literally nothing between you and the A5 Wagyu.
Jesus.
So, you know.
Well, cool. And if you are somebody who's an intermediate novice, probably more mm-hmm. novice than not, how do you not feel like you're underqualified to cook such meat?
Well, I mean, at the end of the day, like, no one's underqualified to cook anything. You just give it a shot, right? And you just got to be willing to have an expensive, like, mistake that's probably still delicious.
Or you invite Paul over to your house with an A5 Wagyu steak and have him do it for you.
I mean, that is also an option.
That sounds like JJ's plan. And if I was at all nearby, it'd be mine. Yeah. All right, you bastard.
But also,
give this a go.
Aim for a type of steak that you're pretty comfortable cooking, and don't go straight to the A5. So get figure out how to cook an American ribeye Wagyu really well. Figure out how to then maybe do like a non A5 Japanese, or like one of the middle grade Australian Wagyus, and kind of work your way up. And even just like stick with prime. Like, there's some amazing prime. Like, if you're not really a super confident cook, you probably have a better experience with a like dry aged like New York strip or ribeye that's just USDA prime. And there's like absolutely nothing wrong with that. I mean, hell, even a good like ribeye, like a choice, you make an amazing steak with. So don't feel like you have to go for like the most expensive piece of meat in the market, especially when you're learning, especially when you're trying to say, okay, I want to master a ribeye. If you want to master a ribeye, USDA choice is the way to go. And then you just really focus on the individual steak. Like, you actually, at the butcher, if you have a butcher counter, you pay attention to the steak and you look at the most important part to me of a ribeye is actually the ribeye cap, which is kind of the separate muscles, sort of the top and around to the side.
Right.
I always go for whichever one has the biggest cap is the one I'll get, because that's the delicious bit. I mean, it's all good, but that's the delicious bit. And then you've got to, like, because they're two distinct muscles and they cook to a slightly different, like at slightly different time because of the different like makeup of them. So figuring out how to get a good, like, medium rare medium on the eye without overcooking the cap is like a lot of work and experimentation and figuring things out. And so do that with your choice.
Well, it sounds like I've got a summer activity.
But I tell you what, from that list of Wagyu they have, I keep coming back to the tri-tip.
Interesting.
So I reckon I would go for that tri-tip they have there. Now, they also had a bunch of pork. I think they had like Berkshire pork, and they might have had some Duroc pork as well.
Yeah, there's some Berkshire or Duroc, and then there's the Barraco
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, Iberico is obviously, you know, the same, from the same fame as like Iberico ham, like come on, Iberico.
Not obvious. I don't know what that means.
Okay. Oh, well, if you haven't had jamón Iberico before, you should definitely try and hunt some down. You might be paying $99 a pound for it, but you only need a couple of thin slices.
Fair enough.
So it's $99 a pound, but you're really only going to spend a couple of dollars.
Cool, man. Yeah. Okay. Got to read up on that. But yeah, the other ones look, damn. Yeah, this is overwhelming. And they also don't list prices, which means if you expected right. them to, I mean, yeah, it's the it. Kind of, yeah, exactly.
Yeah. It's definitely that thing of if you have to see a listed price, you can't afford to buy this thing.
Wild. All right. Well, that's enough decadence for that. Yeah. I'll poke around. Let's get back to more of a chill meal. Paul, I know you're playing around with katsu.
Yeah, I had a. So actually, it was inspired by you because you wanted to. Did last week, I guess, some fried chicken, and we talked about it a little bit beforehand, and you did do it katsu style, right?
Yeah.
And so you did. Quickly talk through what you did.
Sure. I used that incredibly well-seasoned wok and gave it about a, say, like half inch of maybe a little bit more of peanut oil at the bottom of it. Probably more now that I think about it. And I floured and then floured egg and panko'd chicken thighs that I hammered down ahead of time. Left the skin on because why not? And then, yeah, deep fried those little nuggets until they got like this perfect golden brown. It's nice and crispy, really beautiful color. I didn't have a good recipe saying how much seasoning to add and where. So it definitely tasted under seasoned at the end. So I hid that under a bunch of chili crisp. But the flavor was awesome. I absolutely want to do that again.
Nice. Yeah. All right, let me talk through what I did. So I saw you do that and I'm like, yeah, I've got to do that. It's been too long since I've done katsu. So I started off by making a marinade slash whatever you want to call it. And like the traditional fried chicken marinade is like buttermilk, right? And buttermilk is effectively like acidic milk, right? So acid and protein, right? So I was like, well, I don't have buttermilk, but I do have acid. I do have milk. So I added some hot sauce to milk because hot sauce is mostly vinegar with some spice, right? And then I added a bit of my sort of go-to sort of barbecue rub, which is salt, pepper, some paprika, onion powder, garlic powder. And I always have a big tub of it made up for stuff. And I added a bunch of that and added my chicken thighs. I hammered my chicken thighs out to a sort of fairly even, flat-ish. Put them in that in like a plastic bag, a Ziploc bag. I left them for, I don't know, most of the day. I think I did it sometime in the morning. For my dredge, I then did like 2 cups of flour and then I just added a good sprinkling of my barbecue rub into that. For the egg wash, I did 2 or 3 eggs, and then I poured in a bunch of the marinade liquid just to like thin it out a little bit. And then you whisk that real hard because you don't want to have any of the eggy stringy bits. Otherwise, it kind of messes with it coating the meat. And then for the panko, I did 2 things. I had 1 thing of regular panko, but I also pan toasted some panko and just a little bit of olive oil until it was just slightly brown. And so I sort of had that going. I did the first chicken breast, so in the flour, in the egg wash, in the panko. I did the second one and I did it in the toasted panko, and those two went in the oven at 400 convection. So that's my okay, I'm going to see what it looks like to like, you know, oven fry, roughly, what's that thing people use these days? The fancy fries, air fryers. Roughly an air fryer. Convection oven, air fryer, roughly the same thing. And then the other two I had, I did one. I did again one in the regular panko, one in the toasted panko, and then I shallow fried them. And I did the first one just kind of at my regular temps at like 350, 360, that kind of temp. And then the other one I did at a much lower temp at like 320 and for longer. And that was that lower temp one was the one where I toasted it first. And so what I found is, first of all, the end result was that last one was the best one of the bunch. The second best one was the other fried one. And the two out of the oven, I feel like in the oven, you just don't get enough like condensed heat on the panko to really get it nice and brown the way you want it before the chicken's cooked through. And that's even with thigh. I guess if I hadn't hammered it out, it might've been a little bit better. And maybe if I had have done like 350 instead of 400, it would have cooked for longer and therefore maybe helped brown it up. So I'll probably experiment that with that some more, but certainly the fried ones were the best. And what I found was the one that I did kind of the regular way, because I was shallow frying it, parts of it would touch the bottom of the pan and they would cook faster. And so there were some pale patches where the what wasn't touching the bottom of the pan on both sides. Whereas the one I did slower, I guess because the pan wasn't that much hotter than the oil or whatever, it was a lot more even, consistent cook. So I thought that was a really interesting
takeaway. That's really interesting.
Because I don't want to do a full deep fry because I don't do that often enough to keep the oil and I don't want to waste a bunch of oil. So to be able to do like the oil to like half covering it when it's a hammered out chicken thigh, you only need like half an inch to an inch of oil, right? And in a smallish wok with the round bottom, that's not that much oil. So definitely the slower one. But what I found was when you then let it sit there on a tray, actually I had it on a rack on a tray, right? Thinking it would drip out. The bottom of it still got a bit soggy. And what I discovered is if you let it rest for a little bit, turn up the heat in your oil and then do like a second hotter cook, that somehow stops that from happening as much. And the bottom doesn't go as soggy and it stays crispier for longer. And that makes sense because if you look at like Korean fried chicken, generally that's a twice fried thing. There's a lot of fried foods that are generally twice fried. And so I guess that makes sense. I don't know the exact reasons behind it, but certainly if other people are doing it, then it's consistent with my experience. So I definitely came to the shallow fry at a low temp and then do a second shallow fry at a high temp. And the good thing there is you can kind of, if you're cooking for a bigger group of people, you can shallow fry it, put it in the oven at like keep warm. And then like to order, just do that final high temp fry, which is only going to be like 30 seconds a minute per side. So you can pump through those pretty quick and get everyone served pretty quick versus doing them either trying to crowd a pan or doing them one at a time and having half of them cold before the rest are hot. So that is definitely going to be my go-to way to do it, doing a forward. I don't know if the pre-toasted panko made that much difference, but the reason I used them was because I'd used almost all of my other panko and I still had plenty of that. So I just went with that rather than opening a new bag of panko.
Fair enough. Cool, man.
So that was my Katsu experiment.
Hell of a lot. Yeah. Yeah. Mine was just as thorough. Yep. Totally. JJ.
Yeah. And then, of course. Your toppings are a little bit of Japanese mayo, a little bit of tonkatsu sauce, and then you always do a splooge of Japanese or Korean or hot English mustard on the side, sort of cut through it a little bit. And then your side is usually some sort of cabbagey thing. So I thinly sliced some cabbage and added a little bit of Chinese vinegar, which I wouldn't do again because it's a dark color, so it kind of changes the color of the cabbage a bit too much. And then a couple of drops of toasted sesame oil, which I think I would do again.
I get chicken tenders from the grocery store, and I get some garlic breadcrumbs, and I put it in the oven. That's my katsu.
And do you top it with yellow mustard?
That probably works, because I bet you your garlic breadcrumbs are pre-toasted.
Oh, that is true.
And therefore, they're probably going to brown up a lot easier in the oven. And they've probably specifically engineered the product to brown up easily in the oven. But hey, like whatever, as long as you get something delicious at the end.
Yeah, that's true. My girls eat it. If my girls eat it, then that's a win. That's a legit win. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. So,
like, by the way, I can be all the food snob I want, but if people aren't going to eat my food, then you know what was the point? So yeah, if it works,
I do appreciate that about you, Paul. It's like you have absurd quantity of knowledge and willingness to experiment and do it yourself. But if somebody just wants to grill like one metric, you know, burger and call it a meal, you're like, hell yeah, slap it on some bread and I'll eat it too. So
hell yeah.
It's a good philosophy on life.
Yeah.
JJ, what's new in your world? What's something you wanted to talk through today?
I don't have much going on, honestly, since the last time we talked. I've just been dealing with certain situations, but I am proud to say behind me, if you can see it, because this is an audio medium, I got the expansion for Twilight Imperium. Now,
oh God.
Yes.
Pre-tell.
Yes. Okay. So it's an open secret that I am very much a board gamer. I absolutely adore it. I'm horrible at it. I really truly am, but I love every moment of playing board games. And Twilight Imperium is known as one of the biggest 4X games out there. There are some bigger ones, but that's like the mainstream one where you try to take over, or you try to fight basically a galaxy and try to become the leader of the galaxy. Well, it's been around for a while. CZ and I've played a handful of games with hopefully some people who are listening to this podcast. We remember every single one of them. We hold grudges between them because the game takes about 12 hours to play. So you really do remember everything that goes on. And recently, about a year ago during the pandemic, they released the expansion to it, which adds two more players. So you have up to 8 people now playing. There's a whole new mechanic built inside of it. The problem was, is because obviously the pandemic, they cut back on printing, and it became insanely hard to find because there was just a scarcity of them. And I got my hands on a copy. It costs almost the exact same cost of the base game, which is also quite expensive. But I now have a copy of it, and I have it as a nice little nerd flex behind me. It used to be my name tags that used to be behind me when I used to nerd flex in front of people on Zoom calls. But now it's more important because I see POK, which is called Prophecy of the Kings, which is the name of the expansion, over in that corner. And I'm like, yeah, you're going to nerd out on me. Yeah. Check that out. Yeah. You wish you could have that.
I like it because, again, we're in an audio only medium. So this is great for you. So JG, he says it's behind him as a flex. It's directly behind him. So you can't possibly see it.
Yeah.
Unless he intentionally moves to the side to flex on you. So yeah, exactly. I like that little, that need for the additional pivot. I was like, yep. you could do a shelf back there and like dangle.
Well, so here's the thing, Matt. There's two types of people JJ is going to be talking to. Type of people, they're going to see Twilight Imperium and want to beat him up for being a nerd. And the type of people who are going to get excited because he's a nerd just like them. And so by putting it behind his chair, he doesn't have to worry about getting beaten up by the former group.
That's true. What people in our ecosystem are the former is like the thing. It's like if you're like, I sell cloud infrastructure all day and I don't like nerds. Like, what the fuck is wrong with you? Like, go start. Nobody's really in that club. Group.
I was just trying to give JJ an excuse.
It's very kind of you. Well, that's great, JJ. Congratulations. I love board games. I grew up on board games, but I'd never heard of that one. So,
oh my good God. We need to fix that. Cool.
Yeah.
It is on Tabletop Simulator. So if you've got 36 hours to spare.
Yeah.
No, I don't, but I will consider. I saw there are direct flights from Minneapolis to Austin that are on and off sale right now from Sun Country. So if there is a very inexpensive flight after my second vaccination, I'll be playing games in JJ's basement.
He has a basement / games room.
That's just dedicated to board gaming. That's all it's in that. Yeah. Yeah.
That's what we'll do. Yeah. You come on up. We'll go to JJ's basement. We'll play some Twilight Imperium and we'll break it up by cooking some Wagyu steak.
Yes.
That's not a bad idea.
That is one of the better
this all up into
reasons for this to end.
There you go.
I dig it. That sounds wonderful. Hey,
can I tell you a little bit about a thing I found that's both amazing and horrible at the same time?
Absolutely.
I got a new mouse. And there's literally they've somehow built a frictionless scroll wheel.
What?
And so I give it a little scroll and it just spins and spins and spins, which if you're reading a really long document is really useful.
Yeah.
But if you're like scrolling something with it, like even with your finger on it, you take a finger off, it still moves a little bit, but so you've done that. And then you move to another window and you do like a hotkey that has the control key involved. Suddenly your font goes to 0.002 point because control and scroll is generally a
resize,
make it smaller, make it bigger. And so it's been driving me absolutely bananas. I feel like I'll get the hang of it and stop letting it continuously spin when I stop scrolling. But right now it is not fun. So many times I jump across to my terminal window and whoosh, it's the font's disappeared.
That's amazing, Paul. That is like such a modern inconvenience.
It's like Comic Sans for ants.
I love that your terminal's in Comic Sans. That's the best thing I heard today. That's really interesting. I'm gonna ignore that question. JJ, what kind of mouse do you use? I feel like you're a big ball mouse guy.
Well, so nice. I like it. So I've actually used every mouse you can think of. I had the really expensive single trackball one. Then I went to the actual big trackball for the longest time, but I have finally just landed on this guy. Which is just a multi-button simple one.
Yeah, let the record show it's one metric multi-button mouse. Yeah.
But more importantly,
when you charge it, you have to put it upside down and plug into the bottom of it.
No,
that's only the aesthetic of Mac users. Please, Paul.
More importantly, I'm one of those keyboard nerds.
Are there bite marks in the bottom corner of your keyboard? What's that?
No, it's just like little hand things. I'm one of those people in those weird, weird.
Maybe that give that a little wipe down.
Yeah, no, it gets real dirty, real fast. No,
you can't. It's going to ruin the aging on it, Paul.
Yeah,
patina.
I do actually pull every single key off and vacuum and wipe it down at least once a year per Martini Soft. His suggestions with it. He also uses one of these things. Martini Soft is Aaron Claren. I only know him as Martini Soft. We talked a real long time about keyboards, and eventually I ended up on the Kinesis. And did you know the Kinesis is actually in Men in Black, the movie?
No.
I didn't.
Yeah.
And you know what? I didn't really care.
But I feel informed against my will, but more informed than I was before. Yeah. That's great. It's the only time it is futuristic, and it seems alien to most of us.
So who was using it?
Was it an alien
using it?
No, it was... Oh my God, I forgot his name. Not Will Smith, the other dude.
Agent Smith.
No, the other guy. Yeah, the white dude.
Tommy Lee Jones.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Tommy Lee Jones. And it's funny because if you actually look at what he's doing, not that I've seen screenshots of this, he's not actually touching the keys. Like he's just like, his hands are like above it trying to, it's actually quite funny if you're a keyboard nerd like me. Anyway.
Sounds hilarious. I'm going to have to rewatch it just for that scene.
I hope you do. Paul. Oh my God. Fast and Furious 9 is coming out.
God damn it.
And I have already scheduled out watching every single one again with my family because my oldest, I was making a joke over dinner being like, hey, have everyone seen the Fast and Furious 9? And my daughter was like, I've never seen Fast and Furious. I looked at my wife, her eyes got big and she's like, don't. And I'm like, okay. So as of this Sunday, we're going to sit down and start watching the first one. I'm going to tell you the story around it. The next Sunday,
there's not a story. Like, get out of here. You don't need to explain the story to anybody. This car is going fast.
It's cars and family.
Yeah, exactly. And they become superheroes. It's amazing.
It's cars and sexual tension with guns.
Oh my God. It's only second to Resident Evil in my mind. Only second to Resident Evil.
That was a good video game. Can't speak to the movies. Okay. Yeah. Dear God,
that's broke his brain.
I can't believe you're one of them. Paul, are you a closeted Too Fast for Fury type guy yourself?
I will watch them because they are good, like brain melting, like action. But I'm certainly not the super fan. Like I don't stand for what's his name.
Paul Walker. Did Vin Diesel die? I did. I had a little tear come out in my eye. I was like,
What's Vin Diesel's character's name?
Dom.
Dom, that's it. Yeah. I was going to say Dominic. I don't stand for Dom, but I forgot his name.
Yeah.
I didn't know he was a front end developer.
Hey! God. See, Jay,
that's how you do jokes.
Yeah, that was pretty. You should take notes, buddy. That was pretty good.
That was just JJ energy.
That's 8 years of clown college really coming to the front there, Mac.
He's a Officer Dufus reporting for duty. Dear God. Okay, so frictionless scroll wheels, Too Fast for Fury and stuff. I don't know. You know what? I shouldn't. This is a problem of mine. I'll admit it. I am definitely a bit movie pretentious. I'm not pretentious with food at all. I'm definitely not a little pretentious about books. I'm realizing maybe I'm just pretentious. Shit. Okay. Anyway, I really enjoy movies that like make you work and make you think, and like they keep my attention and I get really into them. And like these ones are just like, they're still just blowing shit up. God damn it.
They force you to think because you're like, wait, why in God's name are they pulling a safe through Buenos Aires right now and it hasn't flown off? Like, how is this physically possible? They're in space. How are they in space? Why is there a sub in space? This doesn't make any sense. And it's so...
I don't even know. Is this a plot?
Exactly. That's why I love them so much. They just get so crazy.
I love the way you reframe that, JJ. It's like, don't try to think like how dumb it is that this doesn't make sense. Try to hurt your head into making it make sense, exactly. Despite all of its holes.
It's so great.
Okay. Okay. So I'm gonna try that on, man. I appreciate you. That's very helpful advice.
If I see a picture of Dom in on your poster in the back one day, I know I've won.
Listen, if there's gonna be Vin Diesel in this house, it'll be from Perfect Dark. Oh man,
Riddick.
Riddick. No. The first one.
Yeah,
that was first Riddick. So good.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
What the hell is it? Pitch Black.
Pitch Black.
Yes. Yeah. That's it. Pitch Black. Yeah.
Which truly... I didn't really get it. Sequel Pitch Perfect. Really screwed me.
Okay, I don't think we can get any better than that. That's a pretty good place to stop.
I feel like we're two for two on the better jokes in the JJ show.
That's so good.
Okay, what are you fools cooking this weekend, if anything?
I am doing Mexican style chicken in the way of JJ. CZ got me a rotisserie set a while ago because he's like, JJ, you need to learn how to do this. And occasionally we use it together. But finally, I'm actually cooking it for my parents, which I've not done in a very long time because I've gained skills and I want to show them off. And basically the same style of Mexican chicken that you can get at the little carnicerias around Austin. I've made my own version of it. And I'm going to be making fresh tortillas again. And then tacos. And I know my parents don't listen to this podcast, so I can say this. My parents were like, so what can we bring? We'll bring, you know, a nice bottle of wine or something else. And I sent a text back to my parents saying, it's a Mexican chicken. You might want to bring some Miller Lite for my dad, because I'm not going to buy any, because I don't think wine and Mexican chicken kind of go together. And they did not respond.
Fair enough. Sounds like the chicken will be good.
You know what I reckon would go really well with Mexican chicken?
What's that?
Some of that Spanish bubbly wine you love, JJ. Cava.
Oh, actually, that's a good
I reckon point. that would go well. You should do that.
I think you can even do
like some cava mimosas. You know, and the sweetness of a mimosa would go well with the spice of the Mexican chicken.
That's good. Yeah,
There's some wines. You could even, jump to some of their colonial roots and get like a. I guess that is a Spanish wine, but go like super Spanish and get like a good Spanish vermouth to have as appetizers. You just have like a really good vermouth on ice, and you put a little toothpick with a wedge of orange and a what do you call those things? A little olive, the one with the little red thing in the middle. Stick that in there, and that's like the perfect way to start a Mexican meal, reminding us of their colonial ways, the fact that they were colonialized by some pretty horrible people.
Yeah, well, don't they need one of those lamb legs
destroyed and smashed?
Yeah, the one of those lamb legs too, to like, or is it pork legs? What is it? The one you shave off the little bits of it?
Prosciutto?
Is it? I don't actually know.
Yeah, that's prosciutto, man.
That's prosciutto. I didn't know that. I actually didn't know that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. You were at OpenStack Barcelona, right? You didn't have like the buffet breakfast every morning where you're like slicing the jamon ibérico directly off the leg. And no. you're smashing your own tomatoes and garlic onto the toast to make the tomato bread.
I was there
instead of the wrong hotels, my friend.
I do. Well, we've established that JJ didn't know how to travel for a very long time when I was traveling, like at all, like never leaving the hotel. JJ, come on now. Got to fix that problem. And then as soon as I figure it out, fucking pandemic happens and I can't do anything about it. Anyway. All right.
You'll get there again, buddy. JJ. Okay. That sounds lovely. Paul, what are you up to?
I don't know. I sort of did my big cooking thing for the week when I did the katsu. I do have some leftover cabbage, so I'll probably do some okonomiyaki, which if you want to get some cabbage and stuff, we should cook it together sometime real soon.
Yeah. What is that again? Oh, yeah.
Okonomiyaki. It's basically like a Japanese like savory cabbage pancake.
Yeah. Okay, cool. I recognize it when written and I can't say it or comprehend it yet. My Japanese is horrific. But that sounds wonderful. That'd be really tasty.
Right. You can just call it okay noms if you want.
Okay noms. No, I can just try harder. Like there's enough white people being lazy with words. I can try harder. That's awesome, man. That'd be really fun.
That sounds like when I opened my okonomiyaki food truck. That's what I'm going to call it. Okay, noms.
Okay, done. I would dig that so much. Oh, well, I've got my sister-in-law and her husband-to-be are vaccinated and coming to town in prep of their wedding later this year, which is awesome. Cool. So we're going to their tasting this afternoon, actually. So I get to eat a bunch of food at a fancy place to try their wedding dishes, which I'm pumped about. I don't think I've cooked for them. Yeah, they haven't visited since I got the grill. So I'd like to grill something delicious. I was thinking about either getting some tomahawk steaks and trying that again. I think my sister-in-law is way more into fish. So there's this fjord trout that I've been able to get at the local fishmonger, like Norwegian fjord trout. That's basically like a little bit fatter salmon. So like take traditional salmon, same color, but like it has like a layer of fat towards the edge of it. And like in between each of the fillets, there's like a little bit more fat. It just melts right into it beautifully after like a short dry brine. So I'll probably get a huge fillet of that and go to town and do some veggies on the side. But
show off your chicken wings as well, because you make a pretty mean chicken wing. So you could start with like a chicken wing appetizer and then slide into your salmon.
I forgot I knew how to make chicken wings. I miss that shit. That's good. Oh, yeah. Well, your recipe is amazing. And I've been hankering for some mapo tofu, and I think I'm finally over the fact that I'll be the only one in this house that eats it because it's too spicy for my person.
You can like lower the spice.
Like, how? It's basically 80% hot sauce, or like, you know, the fermented chili paste and the chilies. Like, I mean,
if you use like half the chili paste stuff and replace that with extra tomato paste just to keep some redness, skip adding any extra chili and go light on the Szechuan peppers, which aren't spicy anyway, but still, yeah, might be uncomfortable for people off that aren't super into it. And then you're good.
Yeah. Okay. I didn't think about using more tomato paste. That's a great idea. Because I subbed like one tablespoon of the fermented chili beans with red miso. So like a richer miso, it still gives it like a solid umami and flavor and the right texture. But it still had some spice up there. So if I think I do like a third with tomato paste in there too, it might be able to lighten down and turn into something that can be shared. Because it's so good. It's just really good. Yeah. So cool. Thanks for the tips, per usual.
No, you're welcome. And didn't you make a really good fried tofu dish the other day?
Oh yeah, I forgot about that. Was fun, man. I made like Cantonese style salt and pepper tofu with some, I like just fried up some orange bell peppers and like chopped them in a different strategy that I read on Walk of Life, and crisped up some shallots and garlic and layered that on top. I didn't read the recipe early enough. I would have marinated the tofu for longer if I could. I'll do that next time. But like getting that, it was pretty easy to get a crispy layer on the outside with like a little bit of a dredge on it and then frying in some peanut oil again.
Nice.
Yeah. I forgot about that. Man, I'm cooking a lot. This show is working. I would like to vote for officially changing it to the hallway snack as our title.
I'm all for that. Or at least like that's like half the show's category.
I'd say like anything that we end up talking about tech is very much like it's snackable on the side. Like the main, we talk about food here and I'm into it. Even if, I think that's why people listen.
Yeah.
Tell us if that's true.
Here's something I want you to do. Speaking of salt and pepper fried tofu, if you go to your Asian grocery store, look where they have like the like little spice shakers and stuff, and see if you can find, it's called fancy pepper salt. I'll find the actual name and give it to you. And it is so good. It's basically like salt, white pepper, I think some Szechuan pepper and MSG. And like you fry anything, like you just talked about your tofu, and like sprinkle that on it and give it a shake. It's like the perfect like salt and pepper like pork ribs or salt and pepper tofu or whatever. It's so good. It's like one of my favorite condiments.
Huh.
Fancy pepper That's salt.
Fancy or maybe pepper
it's,
salt.
No, tasty pepper salt. That's it. Tasty pepper salt.
Just like your handle.
Right.
In Software Defined Talk, Paul is Tasty Meat Paul, which I now know means sprinkled tasty with meats. A little MSG. No, Tasty Meat Paul. There's no S.
Oh, I thought I was Tasty. Oh, whatever. I don't know. I don't even know my own name. There we go.
Regardless, one thing's for sure. You're sprinkled in MSG at all times.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. All right, folks. This has been a pleasure. Good to see you.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.